think it's sure now also that we can, that is our meeting. I just want to indicate that today is one of the days that the committee deals with one item which has been on the agenda for quite a long time. Our meeting today will constitute in a form of an inquiry. And I'll just outline quite briefly what is this inquiry. I believe it's one inquiry that is known because we have been dealing with this for a very long time. And we do hope that today we're going to at least move towards a finality to this matter, because this is an obstacle to actually for the community to deal with something from. We do want to deal with something, yes, but we must deal with it and then it must be finalized so that we move on other things. As I always say, our oversight is huge, and therefore there's quite a lot that is in there. So see that today we're going to take the form of the decision of the committee in the form of an inquiry. I would like to outline quite briefly where are we and how we're going to proceed for today. There has been quite a long history into this proceeding of this matter. I'll outline to you events that led to the institution of this inquiry. As a committee, we are actually dealing with an inquiry which we can sort of highlight as an inquiry alleged to be misconduct. I'm sure you heard it said alleged. It is in terms of Section 15 of the Broadcasting Act 4 of 1999. The Act does refer to, if you look at it, that Act of the Broadcasting Act for 1999, it does refer to the removal from office and resignation of a member. That's what the Act looked into. But in this particular case, in this one, we are looking at 15 capital A and 1 small a, Roman figure 1. And in terms of that one, just to repeat it, it's 15 capital A, 1 small a, Roman figure 1. And therefore, that one looks particularly in this form. It says, the National Assembly may, after due inquiry and by the adoption of a resolution, recommend the removal of a member from office on account of, because I referred to Roman figure 1, of misconduct. Not forgetting that it is it's an allegation at this point in time. Now, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, one will just do a summary of the event that leads up to here. And I'm just hoping, I can't see Mr. Vanara. Who is Mr. Vanara? Okay, Mr. Vanara, who has been assisting us with all the legal proceedings in Parliament, who would be here. I would therefore really work closely with him, seeing that now the matter would require more of some legal interrogations at some point, which we will actually work with him very, very closely. Having actually outlined that, I just need to indicate that there were allegations on the newspaper, it was a press which most people saw, and normally because of Parliament, we don't take issues that on the newspaper and convert them into a plan of action. We do develop a program and we have also a plan of action. We then took them just as allegations from the press. But after some time, there was a letter put before my desk, by the GA member, who is Honorable Davis, on the same allegation, whereby there was a request that we need to look into that. I therefore took it upon myself to start working with the legal department after having looked into the facts and having looked into all other documentation that were involved within the committee, because this is the fifth parliament, I then had to just refer back and look after having done a job and looked into the committee, the documentation, the CV, etc. I then had to deal with consultations with the legal service of this parliament. Of course, it took a bit too long because we were actually making sure that we look at it thoroughly and do not falter on that. And I'm sure most people would agree that possibly if we faltered, even there was a current judgment, we could have not made it with also the judgment. Because we're a parliament, you know, in parliament, in committees, one of the one political parties are very less parties. They're all for political parties. There will be that party that is in the governing party. There will be also those parties that are opposition parties. It was not a good time particularly from the side of myself as said, was there was also a thinking that I am delaying the case. You know, it's like there was something, I did get some attacks as well. You know, there was a time when I wanted to brief members, I remember. I said, member, can I brief you? Because there were quite a lot. You know, I was communicating with a SAPC chairperson, Mrs. Ellen Chavalala, whom we are looking into the litigation, which is in terms of the misrepresentation of the prosecution. Then there were those two that I'm delaying, and then I requested maybe to brief the members, and I was also accused that I've actually expelled media, I've closed the meeting. You know, it's part of what has actually happened. You know, because Parliament is not just homogeneous, it's not like we're all, they will also, would also oppose one another in the nature of Parliament, and opposition was playing its role at the time. Okay? In the midst of all of that, in the main two letters written to the chairperson of the FAPC, whereby Mrs. N. Chavalala, on the first letter, did request an postponement, and then on the other matter, she actually indicated that, you know, it actually showed that we may not be able to get the qualifications now or anywhere, because there was also an alleged issue that USA has sort of missed some records of a number of other learners, and they are still sorting out that until the first time that UNISA comes back, it is only then that she can respond to us. And therefore, I was obliged now to give the message to the court, because it was no longer a matter of, because my intention was to get her responding by giving me qualifications. You know, even the extension of time was in order to give the sufficient time to actually deal with that matter. When I took the matter to the committee, I remember the first committee, it was before that one that took it, it was the first committee, there was an immediate decision that while we work on this affair like we're doing, we should also consider suspension, which was agreed by everyone else in the committee. We deferred that decision, didn't take it immediately because we just needed to also refer and see if are we taking the correct path. And the next meeting of the committee, which took place on the 16th. After all the proceedings, their members did meet again and sat down, and with consultation and advice from the legal section, there was then the decision to suspend. So in other words, on the 16th, after sufficient consultation with the legal section, an outline by Mr. Vainara was requested to address the meeting on that day, and then the committee decided that, okay, based on all those advices, we are in suspense. We are recommending, because the committee can only recommend the suspension, and therefore it can send further to the president. But further to the recommendation, a decision was taken to hold the inquiry on the 25th of September. That was a Thursday. The first inquiry, the decision by the committee, was the 25th of September. So, we then had strategic planning session with the committee. It was there around Joburg. And then we actually thought, because it was the 16th of September when we said it was the inquiry on the 25th, then thought, no, can't we postpone that? Because we thought it's a little time for Mrs. Chavalala. 25th, let's give her sufficient time. And then we did allocate time. And then we actually gave a date of the 14th of October, if I remember very well. Okay, it's the 14th of October. That was a date that we actually reconsidered after we took the 25th. The intention of the committee was to give Mrs. Chavalala sufficient time to consult, or if she needed any representation, she does that, and just have enough time. Of course, on the 14th, once we said, the members did agree to shift the date. On the 14th, a charge sheet was emailed to Mrs. Chavalala again. There was, in fact, a charge sheet was issued on the 23rd, you know, because we met on the 22nd for strategic planning. On the 23rd, then the charge sheet and every other thing were delivered to her. Then on the 14th, when we said, there was a slight amendment which we didn't really make, and it was also made on the charge sheet, or on that date, which was also reissued again to Mrs. Chavalala. So what happened is that we also agreed, after some deliberation, we also agreed to postpone the seeking to another date. Now, the inquiry that was set for the twin bed was interdicted by court. It could not, because we went with the twin bed of two. It could not sit. After the court's decision to dismiss the case on the 12th, the inquiry is now sitting again. We did intend to sit on the 18th, but people in the parliament was very hectic, and we could not sit. We finally took the state of the bed. In our opinion, we should have long sat as a portfolio committee, but unfortunately, because of the hectic schedule, which was already there, we could not then sit. I'm actually outlining that to just make the members recall, you know, and also to make sure that once we start, we realize that it's been a long path from our side. And we have all intentions of this committee to put this matter behind us, but we definitely have a task, a mandate again, from our oversight responsibility to ensure that we do it as eligible as possible and as diligent as possible, and we must make sure that we actually represent Parliament appropriately and ensure that we've done a job that cannot be questioned in the future. By so saying, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, can I then request that we get to move into the charges, and they will be led by Mr. Van Hara, and then I will take it over once we come to the side of leading.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. The notice of hearing, which was communicated to Ms. Zandile Ntshabalala and given to her, and amended one was given to her on Tuesday, the 14th of October, reads as follows. And I'm only going to read the charges. The charges and allegations. You are required to answer the charges and allegations relating to the misconduct listed below. Charge 1, it is alleged that as a member of the South African Broadcasting Corporation, the SABC Board, you are guilty of conduct constituting misconduct in terms of Section 15, Capital A, Subsection 1, Paragraph A, Roman Figure 1 of the Broadcasting Act, 1999, Act No. 4 of 1999, in that, while as a member of the SABC Interim Board, and during the nomination process for members of the current SABC Board to the National Assembly and or the Portfolio Committee on Communications, you committed misconduct by misrepresenting and or lying about your academic qualifications in a curriculum vitae submitted to the National Assembly and or the Portfolio Committee on Communications by representing that you possess a Bachelor of Commerce BCom degree and a postgraduate diploma in labor relations from the University of South Africa, UNISA. When you knew or ought reasonably to have known that you did not possess the gained academic qualifications. As 2, it is alleged that you are guilty of conduct constituting an offense in terms of Section 9 of the Justices of the Peace and Commissioners of Old Act, 1963, Act No. 16 of 1963, in that in an affidavit, affirmation, or solemn or attested declaration made on 23 July 2013 and before person competent to administer an oath or affirmation or take the declaration in question. You made a false statement, known it to be false, by claiming that you couldn't furnish copies of your academic qualifications as you locked them in a house burglary around 2000 to 2002. Those are the charges, sir.
Okay, we are at a point where it would require that there should be a pleading from Mr. Tshabalala whether she pleads not guilty.
Thank you, Madam Chair, honourable members. I have a position and affidavit by my client, which I will seek to read into the record. I may admit.
Okay, would that constitute maybe part of the responsible at that moment was still at a pleading, which was definitely a pleading. And we also noticed that your client is not, we haven't been informed, maybe of any other reason, but we are at a point where he's pleading.
Madam Chair, other members, the phase for pleading is not appropriate at this juncture. It's not appropriate to keep this juncture listed. I would seek that I read the record, just to record the affidavit of Mr. Lalla, so that the former members might understand why I'm here on my side.
Mr. Vanana, would need your indulgence on that one, because, well, to the best of our knowledge, the first thing that Mrs. Chabalala has been invited to this meeting. Mrs. Chabalala is currently not present and we're not informed what are the reasons. And I'm not sure if we should take the affidavit process, should we take the line of affidavit, because our outline, maybe let me outline the process. The process is such that there is pleading of either guilty or not, which can be done by a representative, which I think is acceptable in accordance to our charge sheet, which will be followed by the first witness and the second witness accordingly. Thereafter, we can afford a representation from Ms. Chabalala. But at this point, I'm not sure if then this, because in terms of our process, we need that to be done. I'm not sure what does it mean if then the time is dealing. Can you indulge us on that area, Mr. Vanash?
Thanks, Chair. The notice of hearing, Chair, is clear that the proceedings may proceed in Ms. Chabalala's absence, but at this stage, all we know is that she is not here, having been duly notified. But we do have her legal representative in the committee's midst. Perhaps I would suggest that the committee hears from her legal representative what the reasons are for her not to be here. And I think the indication was that Mr. Kay wanted to do that. Over to you.
In that note, Mr. Kinley, proceed.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. I'll read from an affidavit prepared by Ms. Zandile Ellen Chabalala. I identified Zandile Ellen Chabalala, hereby make oath and say that the contents of this affidavit are within my personal knowledge and are true and correct, save where the context indicates otherwise, and in which case I readily believe them to be true and correct. Where I rely on information conveyed to me by others, I believe it to be true and correct. When I make submissions of a legal nature, I do so on the advice of my legal representatives, which advice I really believe to be true and correct. Following the decision handed down by the Honourable Justice Bartman on 12 November 2014, in the matter in which I sought a deterrent, that the inquiry instituted by the Portfolio Committee in terms of Section 15A1 of the Broadcasting Act 4 of 1999 is a disciplinary inquiry, I have been willing to engage with the Portfolio Committee and to cooperate in the conduct of the inquiry. I have been willing to do so on the basis of the Portfolio Committee's agreement that the principles of natural justice are to apply to the inquiry as well as the statements in the learned judge's decision regarding what is necessary to ensure that the inquiry is procedurally fair, and in the belief that that inquiry conducted against me would be procedurally fair. It is now clear that I will not receive a fair hearing. In particular, the learned judge made it clear in paragraph 17 of her judgment that the principles of natural justice dictate that I am entitled to be represented by a legal team of my choice. Despite this, on the very same day that the judgment was handed down, the Portfolio Committee unilaterally decided to set the inquiry down for hearing on 18 November 2014, a mere 4 days later, without considering the availability of my legal representatives or my own availability. My attorney addressed a letter to the Portfolio Committee on 30 November 2014, in which the committee was requested to take account of my rights and consider rescheduling the inquiry on a date that reasonably accommodates my legal representatives. This was, however, refused by the Quaternary Committee, and accordingly I was required to make a formal application for the deferment of the inquiry, which I duly did. While the Quaternary Committee agreed to postpone the inquiry, it was again done without the consultation of my legal representatives, and the date of 3 December 2014 was unilaterally decided upon by the Quaternary Committee, despite the committee's chief advisor agreeing to wait for my attorney to confirm counsel's availability. When my attorney informed the Portfolio Committee's chief legal advisor that my counsel was not available on 3 December 2014 and that in any event more than one day would be required for the hearing, and suggested the dates 10, 11, and 12 December 2014, he was advised that the Portfolio Committee had already unilaterally decided on 3 December 2014. My attorney then again wrote to the Portfolio Committee on 18 November 2014, requesting that the inquiry be postponed to a mutually convenient date, so that A, my counsel's availability could be secured, and B, my attorney would have sufficient time to procure evidence and secure the attendance of witnesses, including expert witnesses, in my defense. On 20 November 2014, the Portfolio Committee responded stating that they had considered all the relevant factors and decided that it was reasonable to postpone the inquiry to 3 December 2014, notwithstanding what was pointed out by my attorney. As a result of the Portfolio Committee's unfair and uncompromised attitude, I have therefore been forced to make numerous requests for a postponement of the inquiry. Despite these requests for the inquiry to be postponed to a mutually convenient day being entirely reasonable, they have been ignored. The Portfolio Committee has yet to fetch my attorney with statements from the various witnesses it intends to lead against me, despite the request for this information from an attorney in this letter to Portfolio Committee dated 13 October 2014. It is clear that the Honourable Justice Barton's judgment has been ignored as regards the principles of natural justice, as demonstrated by the Portfolio Committee's insistence on unilaterally convening the inquiry without regard to the availability of my counsel. Despite having indicated my willingness to participate in the inquiry, but on a fair basis, my request for a postponement to secure the evidence of a forensic expert and an IT expert have been denied. My attorney has also had the difficulty of 10 access to Eunice's records. The onus is on the evidence leader prosecuting the charges of misconduct against him to prove these charges. It does not lie with Portfolio Committee. In this regard, an onus has been laid on the evidence of the witness from Eunice, Mr. Leishi van Veek, the content of which has already deliberately been leaked to the media and the public. Mr. Davies, MP, has also done his own investigation and procured the services of a private company to do his investigation. The investigation and allegedly shows that I have no degree. I am entitled to demand Mr. Davies' refusal and receive further particulars regarding this private company. The evidence of Mr. J.C. van Veek constitutes here's evidence, as is clear from the letter dated 4 July 2014, and signed by him that he drew the information from the Eunice computer system. There is no indication that he is a computer expert. The information contained on the Eunice system is false and incorrect and has been manipulated. I am only able to deal with the evidence of Mr. van Veek by way of expert testimony, the opportunity for which has been denied by the Portfolio Committee. It is not a simple matter of me simply producing a certificate. I have already gone on oath to say that it was heard in doing a housebreaking, and I reported this to the chefs. Given that Eunice is a distant in an institution, it is also not easy to get witnesses to testify that they studied with me. Forensic evidence is therefore a very important factor in this matter, and more time is needed to procure such evidence. There is no urgency and therefore no reason why proper expense could not be agreed upon between myself and the Portfolio Committee. The fact that the matter has a long history is irrelevant, and the requested postponements were not unreasonable. It is further clear from the conduct of several members of the Portfolio Committee that the committee has attributed a clear and manifest bias against me. Given the unreasonable stance of the Portfolio Committee, in particular the clear indication that it does not intend to comply with the principles of natural justice, notwithstanding the content of the Honourable Mr. Justice Barton's judgment, a notice of application for leave to appeal against the decision has been filed. The effect of this should be to postpone the hearing of the inquiry pending the outcome of the appeal. Despite of the chair of the portfolio committee has previously conveyed to the public and the media, the interim court order granted on 23 October 2014 was an order granted by agreement that the inquiry would be postponed sine die pending the finalization of matter. The matter has not been finalized until the appeal procedures have been exhausted. Despite having been posted out to the portfolio committee in a letter addressed to the committee by my attorney on 27 November 2014, the portfolio committee has indicated on 28 November 2014 that it intends to proceed with the inquiry regardless. The content of this letter places it beyond doubt that the portfolio committee intends to prosecute me rather than conduct investigative inquiry. Finally, I find it ironic that most recently certain opposition parties who are represented on the portfolio committee cried foul when members of the parliament belonging to the EFF were suspended from parliament and when the decision on the so-called Handler report was passed by majority vote. These parties all complained of procedural unfairness and alleged the ruling party had played judge, jury and prosecutor. This is precisely what the portfolio committee has been doing and will be doing. They proceed to find me guilty without giving me a proper and fair hearing. This is an important matter which is unprecedented and which has legal and constitutional consequences. In these circumstances, I cannot participate in a hearing which, the outcome of which has been preordained. The rights in this regard are reserved. I can say it's signed by my client, Sandra Ellen Sabalala, and I would hand you the original of that affidavit if I might.
We have all had the affidavit that the legal representative is attending, or Mrs. Ellen Chabalala has actually instructed that he's right. Before I can actually do comments and deal with the matter together the committee, and I just want to ask one question. We did not hear the reasons why she is not here. Is it based on the fact that she decided that she will present it?
Madam Chair, honourable members, from the affidavit that was read, I think it's clear that there are allegations of procedural unfairness in the convening of this meeting today, and also there is the case for leave to appeal lodged, which has the effect of continuing the suspension of the portfolio committee's proceedings.
Okay, so it means based on that she chose not to be here, and then she actually sends you here and you are presented. Okay? Honourable members, there is this matter that is put before us. Before I can even go back to Mr. Vanara, possibly just indicate one issue. I have the issue of true and correct, which gives me comfort in terms of the understanding of the church judges. And now, in terms of setting up of the date, it needs to be, I think I have a responsibility to clarify that as Parliament, we do put up our focus. Honestly speaking, if Parliament cannot, based on the tires of any legal representative or any institution's availability, we might end up just sitting waiting for people to have dates that are available. I therefore believe that it is correct for Parliament to have a program that it operates on. We have tried to get some dates, we've been shifting and moving. The dates that we had as a portfolio committee is this date. Everyone else knows that Parliament has currently gone on first. I've chosen that we'll come back because we have a commitment to deal with this matter. And therefore, if we can allow a parliament that dates for our meetings can be dictated also, we won't have a parliament that is abolished. We therefore want to set it quite clear that we'll continue as parliament to work within the programs of parliament. Like any other institution, the court put a date, nobody argues with it. Because that's a court date. Whatever you do, you need to really put aside whatever and deal with the court. That's how it works. Parliament is also an independent institution. You know, which has a particular mandate, it does put the date. It would be strange that all of a sudden, as the portfolio committee, we subject Parliament to the dates that are chosen by either legal representatives, availability of the legal representatives of other members. I believe as this could have bend us back quite a lot and enough. It is completely unfair to then subject it that we must get dates of any other. If you look at the 2020 exit up to now, honestly speaking, I don't really think that we should work that way. We should subject talent. It will be irresponsible on the side of the committee. Of the issue of putting a date, I believe that we are on course for the portfolio committee. No institution should dictate a date for us. No legal representative should say, I'm not available today, I'm only available on Saturday or Monday, and so on. I therefore believe that that is correct for us to do, and we should stick to that as Parliament. But that's how the committee has been working all the years, and we can't bring it today all of a sudden for the local committee on communications. Since Parliament, we start to bend that, you know, Parliament will be told, I'm available today, I'm available next year, abroad. It doesn't work that way. Okay. No, and more than that, well, of course, I need to emphasize that, surely if you look at the background of really exercise sufficient patients, well, there have been, you know, a reading from the side of Parliament that there is a lot of planning of time here, and we're not sure why. We can't be the same as the portfolio committee. There's no time we want to buy, we want to do our work, and we want to finalize our work, as much as we have ended the many times. Okay, I won't say much, but let me request Honourable Vanara, after just this comment, you know, if we say regional agents on this matter, honestly speaking, just throwing a shoe straight on our face, it's no agents. The people out there, this has been a public matter, we need to finalize it. Actually ridiculous, the committee. How do you have a committee that was on one matter for so long? There is agency to finalize it and move on. I've always indicated, and I'm disappointed to hear that there should be articulations that there's no agency on this matter. It's so wrong, so unfair to a committee. Honestly, we need to defend the work of this committee, and everything that comes to the committee is urgent. Every other thing is urgent. This matter is also urgent. We need to deal with it. We intend to finalize it. Mr. Vanara?
Thank you, Chair, and the honorable members. I must indicate that the affidavit has just been handed over to the committee and myself. I received a copy. They have not had time to, in detail, deal with the issues conversed in the affidavit. However, the few that I am sufficiently equipped to deal with at the moment. One, it is the issue around the issue of agency. I also submit that given the history of this matter, when it started around July, given the patience exhibited by the committee towards Ms. Shabalala in affording her enough opportunities to prepare her defense to the charges. This matter was initially scheduled around the 25th of September and was then moved to the 14th of October, precisely to enable Ms. Chavaz to exercise all her rights that are enshrined within the motion of the rules of natural justice, i.e. to consult a legal team. She waited until the eve of the 14th to consult senior counsels on record, having been consulted on the 13th, or briefed on the 13th of October, a day before this matter, having been given in excess of 2 weeks for her to prepare for the hearing. On the 14th, the committee was advised that a legal team is not available for a subsequent postponement to the 24th of October, the following week. Strangely, Chair, on the same day that the legal team would have had other commitments, they found sufficient time to consult with them, prepare an urgent court application to the Western Cape High Court in an attempt to stop the proceedings and get a declaratory order on what the committee really considered a non-issue to determine the status of the inquiry in terms of Section 15, Capital A1 of the Broadcasting Act. Needless to say, sir, the application was dismissed by the Honorable Court. And we are now sitting with a noting of an appeal. And we are advised today that the consequence or the effect of noting an appeal in the circumstances of this matter prevents or reactivates the sine die postponement of the proceedings of this committee, which are agreed upon between the parties and the court order. To that extent, Chair, I would want to submit the legal position, the correct legal position, in respect of such interim orders. And for this, Chair, I would like to submit the following authorities. This MV Snow Delta, Servership LTD, versus Discount Tonnage LTD. This is a 1996 judgment, Volume 4, SA, 1234. K judgment. The judgment is SAB Lines PTY versus K Test Engineering Works PTY LTD. It's a 1968 judgment, Volume 2, SA, 535. It's also a CAPE decision, which is in our jurisdiction and binding. And as well as Ishmael versus Keso G, this is a 1957 Volume 1 SA 684, is a transfer decision at page 687, paragraph G. I'd like to the position is summarized as follows in respect of an application or appeal where there has been an interdict. The refusal of a final order, and I quote, the refusal of final order where interim interdicted relief was granted, but final relief refused, does not revive the interim order unless the parties have specifically agreed to the continued existence of the interim interdict pending an appeal. That is the legal position as I understand it. Honorable Chair and the members of the committee. I have not been referred to any decided case that differs from these judgments. And it is my respectful submission, therefore, Chair, that the position as advanced by Mr. Banala, which is legal position, I assume, unless I'm corrected, that some would have been advised around this, that position is not legally correct, that there is nothing absent the consent from this committee to agree to a postponement of today's proceedings, absent a court order that prevents the committee from proceeding today, stopping the committee from proceeding with its business today. The issue of documentary evidence not given to the legal counsel, I find that argument very strange, Chairperson, in view of the fact that Ms. Shabalala was furnished with all the documents, and a legal team, in reply to a letter written requesting documents, was furnished with all the documents in possession of the evidence leader. It is correct, Chairperson, that the obligation or the onus rests on myself as the evidence leader to prove the allegations levels against Mr. Shabalala. I am prepared to do that today. I'm ready and available to proceed and to execute that, Chairperson. The last thing that I would like the committee to take into account is that we are dealing here with a matter of public importance. And it is a matter that must be dealt with expeditiously. We're dealing here with a national set. The SABC does not belong to an individual. It belongs to the people of this country. And therefore, it cannot be that an issue that affects the integrity of a chairperson of the board of the SABC has been brought and is being attended to by an institution of the people, a committee of the National Assembly. Given the time that this committee has accorded Ms. Tshabalala and her legal team to find time within their busy schedule to attend to this matter expeditiously. And it is regrettable that the matter is viewed as not being present. With those few submissions, Chair, I think we have learned that Ms. Tshabalala has now decided not to present herself to the committee for all the reasons that she has put forward, and it is then up to the committee to decide what to do going forward. I must also indicate that in the both in the notice of hearing and the correspondence between the committee and her legal team, it was pointed out that her failure to attend these proceedings would result in the committee proceeding in her absence. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vanara. Committee, do you want to comment? Or should we just proceed? Okay, quite briefly, so that we don't take much time. Honorable Kalako.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm in full agreement with the legal advice we are getting now. It sets us on the right footing to continue with the process. Don't want to repeat what you have said, that this is a matter of public importance. And I think it must be re-emphasized that SABC is a public broadcaster, is in the public interest. Everybody is looking at this issue we are dealing with, especially when it comes it affects the matters we are dealing with concerning the issue. So to me, I would agree fully that we proceed today. The only advice which I've heard in one of the demands which Ms. Ellen Tshabalala makes in her affidavit, which I want an advice to from, I thought you'll touch on it, is demanding the recusal of one of the honorable members of the committee, Honorable Member Davis. If we can get an advice on that so that we move without prejudicing our inquiry, and I don't know what the basis of that, but I want us to get an advice on that. I just picked that up when her representative was writing the affidavit. But, Chair, let's continue with the process.
Okay, thank you, members. So we will be proceeding. Is that right? Would you like to comment and then we proceed to Mr. Vanara? Mr. Vanara, there is a particular issue that is raised, which we just want to clear before we move forward. Mr. Vanara? And then we'll also guide in terms of, you know, because we already started with leading the charge. We'll guide in terms of also leading evidence. If there's any response, we'll actually take it as well.
So, as I indicated, I only received this affidavit now, and I'm just trying to determine the basis for the demand. If you think I can just be given some time just to look at this matter. Thanks.
Okay, because this matter, again, Mr. Vanara, while we're looking at it, this matter did undergo a court process. And I actually, from the judgment, possibly if there was an intention to do so, the judgment that was laid down could not actually direct us to take him out or meeting other members of the portfolio committee. And therefore, because it's from court, and therefore no one was said you should participate, the opinion that one would have is that members of the portfolio committee are members of the portfolio committee and would have to proceed in that light. What will guide us is the evidence that we've been looking for, the portfolio committee, if we're able to have the evidence and we're able to do our work, because we could not get the evidence from Mrs. Ellen Shabalala herself, and therefore possibly if we even move on to our process, we can be able to deal with our work.
If I might at this point, Madam Chair, or the members, excuse myself.
That's the issue. I think he can be excused as he's also excluded himself. Can you proceed to that, Mr. Hanna?
Thanks, Chair. But I've had a look at paragraph on page 4. At the bottom of paragraph 13, the last sentence there says Mr. Davis MP has also done his own investigation and procured the services of a private company to do his investigation. Now, the investigation allegedly shows that I have no degree. I'm entitled to demand Mr. Davis' refusal and to receive further particulars regarding this private company. My reading of that's continued on page 5 of the affidavit. By my reading of this particular paragraph, seems to suggest that Ms. Shabalala holds the view that if she so wants, she could demand for the recusal of Mr. Davis. And I don't get a sense that she is actually demanding his recusal. If that's the case, assuming that for her, that she's asking or demanding for the recusal of Mr. Davis, if I look at the reasons advanced, the reasons appear to be that Mr. Davis has procured the services of a private company to do his investigation. And I don't see, based on this basis, that is advanced here. The reason why Mr. Davis should recuse himself. That's my opinion, sir. And on the issue of Ms. Shabalala's not being here today, we are advised, sir, that she took a conscious decision not to be here today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, honorable member. Having cleared all the matters, I think then we can then proceed with this inquiry to the allegation that the chairperson of the South African Broadcasting Corporation, Mrs. Zandile Ellen Shabalala, misrepresented her academic qualifications to the National Assembly. And therefore, can we then proceed, Mr. Varnara? Could you handle the outline of witnesses accordingly? And we will take the members if there are any questions, and therefore we will open up the matter for discussion after we have let the witnesses. Over to Mr. Vanara.
Thank you, Chair. In line with the notice of hearing, given the developments of this morning, I think a plea of not guilty will have to be entered for record purposes on behalf of Mr. Lavis. Then I then move, Chair, to call Ms. Van Dijk.
Just re-emphasize that, of course, in terms of outline, a plea of not guilty is entered into. In the absence of Ms. Shabalala, I'll do that on her behalf. Proceed to that.
Can I also confirm, Chair, that the pleas of not guilty are entered in respect of both charges 1 and 2?
Do you have called the first witness? Okay, Mr. Van Wijk is over there. Honourable members will remember that Mr. Van Wijk has been coming up and down from University of South Africa, UNISA. We maybe would have to sincerely thank them for their patience as well, because it's been too much up, down, postponement and so on. And his presence is appreciated by the committee and the patients thereof. Thank you very much. Mr. Vanara.
Uh, Chair, there is documents that I would like to be circulated to members, and I'll also ask for a 5-minute break.
Can we then take that break? Yes, so that we all get the document number, and then we can go through all the messages.
Thank you. You have something to eat
there? I just have some milk.
Why is it I ask you to sit next to me in the room when I'm done?
Why is it that you sit next to me?
You said I must say you will see me treat me when I can use the bathroom for stuff, huh?
Maybe you secretly like the limelight.
Oh my dear.
Even like love you.
Ever since I'm just parliament, you know. Always find me. No, he said he can't go around for me.
Maybe she has said you should have been the member. Maybe she has said that side.
I was that side, then he called me that side, you see. I don't like to sit
here. I was wondering why you sit here.
I mean, you know me, I'm always in the back here. This is my space here. The uncomfortable, you know. And I was just came with us. Since 94, I'm tired of this now. Why are you carrying on that water? There's a lot of water. Why?
Think about what you do.
No. I'm done now. I finished the school there. And my pass. But the ladies are here, it's not time. Honestly, it's just lying. Yeah. What then? Why did you say something to me? That's it, Kevin Cozy. Tomorrow you want to apply for position somewhere.
Yeah.
He was you're not a good person, you know?
Yeah.
Never know.
Yeah, you can know.
That's why ever since 94, I stay out of the line that I'm telling you. They always wear it. I'm coming here back. You know, this newspaper will ask me, why are you always such an electrical position? It's not so fine,
yeah.
I'm just in 94, my dear.
Can you write a book?
What?
The stuff you must have heard.
I'm telling you. All these members. So far, this one's wild. This one's it up now. That's better than the previous one.
No ID?
that anything would have been last year with me. You know, had this problem. And then the minister will say, why is it there you don't know what it is? The big part of this doesn't take years from you.
No, of course.
Why you accept other days? Let's wait. Give us 3 days a week and she can get from the university. No?
Yeah.
And that's what it is. She was the
same university.
Now we should be straight.
Thank you.
Can you please settle down to resume the work of the committee? Those that are outside, please come in. Let's all get settled so that we can proceed. Okay, seeing that we're all settled, let's then proceed. Mr. Lara?
Thank you, Chair. I have my first witness, Chair, Mr. Jan Kutsia van Dijk, for swearing in. I have discussed it with him. He is not opposed to taking the first part of it.
Okay, in that note, Mr. Jan Kutsia van Dijk, I need to put it before you that I need to request you to find out for yourself that do you swear that the content of your submission or what you are about to testify on is true and correct? If that is so, please raise your right hand as outlined by Mr. Vanara.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Proceed, Mr. Vanara.
Mr. Van Dijk, can you tell the committee who you are and where you work?
Madam Chair, my name is Jan Kutsia van Dijk. I'm the Executive Director of Legal Services, UNISA. UNISA is a strategic juristic person participating in legal and commercial traffic like any other legal entity. And I'm taking overarching responsibility for legal work of UNISA. I'm also the delegated function attending to applications pertaining to promotion of the Administrative Justice Act as well as the Access to Information Act. And I'm sending years with UNISA. Thank you.
Would it be correct that you're the information officer? Thank you.
That's correct. I'm also the information officer. As said, I attend to the applications for access to information.
You have been requested to come and share information around one of your four students, Ms. Ellen Zandile Makuban, Bon Shabalala. not aware of that.
Yes, I'm aware of the matter. If I recall correctly, it was on about May of this year that we initially received an application from Media 24, I cannot remember the journalist's name, inquiring about the qualifications of Ms. Chabalala. We have approached to dish out private information, so we initially declined the request, and that was then followed onward by an appeal process. After seeing the relevant regulating sections pertaining to the Act, we decided that it is indeed information that we will have to disclose. We then followed procedure by giving Mrs. Chabalala notice at the SABC that we've received a relevant request for information and that she has 21 days to respond. Nothing came back to us, and we then inquired through the lady that we contacted initially, which confirmed that the notice that we sent through to her was indeed delivered to her. During that period, unfortunately, in my junk mail, request of or a response from lawyers by the name of Saleki, asking also access to the academic records of Ms. Chabalala, which I unfortunately it landed in my junk mail. I didn't pick it up, and when I did ultimately got hold of it or became aware of it, I was unable to initially link it up with the very same Chabalala that the Media 24 application was about. I then later on was able to link it to, and then realizing that Mr. Chabalala decided apparently on my notice that I referred to earlier to either request access or in fact I don't know exactly what she was trying to do, but the point is that they responded by asking the very same information that Media 24 was looking for. So on the 17th of July, I then attached all the relevant UNISA academic records and sent it by email, because the request came through email, so I sent it back, responded by sending it to the Saleki attorneys by email. By that time, we also picked up that apparently there was a claim that she did some studies at the SBL, the UNISA Business School at Midrand. And I was not at that stage immediately able to lay my hands on that information, but when I got hold of it, I made that also available to the very same attorney, Saleki attorneys, on the 27th of July. I then never heard from them again. The next that I heard about the matter was obviously in media, in the press, and then it was early October, if I recall correctly, that I was contacted by the secretary of this committee, inquiring whether or not I would be available to come and testify before the committee. And as you indeed have set out this morning on various occasions, you sponsored me a free trip to Cape Town. Thank you.
Okay. The Media 24 inquiry, what is it that they were? They wanted to know specifically.
Information I do have in front of me, Mrs. Venara, but if I recall correctly, or if my recollection is correct, it was a simple, straightforward request for, stating firstly that the Chabalala was the SABC chair, which I didn't know at that stage, and that due to the public position that she holds, that she wants other claims that she has obtained certain qualifications from UNISA, and the request was actually to confirm whether or not she was a student and what qualifications was awarded and were conferred. Thank you.
I don't understand that there was an internal process trying to get contacting her, and then there was a letter or an email from Saleki Tennis to which you responded. Ultimately, what was your response back to Media 24?
My response to Media 24 is very, very brief. I think it was literally two lines. If I recall correctly, it says simply that no qualification was awarded to the said individual. I think that's more or less all that we say. We, as said previously, we at UNISA do not want to unnecessarily make private information of our students known to our assembly. So UNISA will record that, according to our records, no qualification was ever awarded and conferred upon Mrs. Chabalala or Baguban issue once they also were not to us.
Would that then include the BCom degree as well as the diploma in labor relations?
Yeah. If I, you made available information to the committee members, and maybe it is appropriate that I just talk them through the relevant information.
And before that, at the moment, all I just want to find out from you, in your response to Media 24, quoting what you just referred to, that the university has no record of having awarded qualifications to Mr. Chabalala or Mahubani.
Mr. Vanara, we did not refer to any specific qualification by me. We just said that no qualifications and or qualification was ever conferred or awarded. What I can tell you is that Mr. Chabalala started to study at UNISA in 1988. At one stage, she apparently then decided to stop the studies and she registered again in 1996.
Yes, sorry for interrupting you. I just want to just take a third way of going on, because you have members of the committee that must follow your evidence. Chair, with your permission, we do have here a bundle of documents that Mr. Van Rijck will be talking to. I've just now asked the committee assistant to circulate the document amongst the members of the committee to basically follow the testimony that Mr. Van Rijck is going to provide. It is a document that is entitled The Case, Mrs. Ellen Zandileng Magubane Bontola. If all members of the committee have the documents in front, it would really be helpful.
We just wanted to verify, was she not born Makubani and then became Chabalala? I'm sure that's the case, but also.
Madam Chair, according to our information, she was born Chabalala. Her married name was Makubani.
The members of the committee would note that the document, well, the statement has got 5 pages, and then after our annexes, you will see the document keep on referring to annexes, annex A1, annex A2. So the annexes are immediately behind the statement, so that the committee members follow. Mr. Van Rijck, then, now that the members are in possession of your statement, can you then take the committee down memory lane in respect of this one-time student of yours, this Ellen Zandile Kuban? Can you tell us when the institution made contact for the first time with him?
Thank you, Mr. Nara. For convenience of the members of the committee, what we initially made available to the Lake attorneys was the set of documents, Annex A2, if I recall correctly, it's up to SBL 8. However, we decided when we were requested to come and testify about this to prepare this narrative of about 5 pages within the substantiating or corroborating documents at the back, the annexes. If I could ask the members of the committee to look at Annexure A1. Now, Annexure A1 represents the UNISA registration page from the student, and you will see on your left about the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about the 6th column or line, there appears a number 580802. And then a little bit lower down, 5-59-52139-9. Now, at the time when Ms. Chabalala registered with UNISA, that was the kind of document that she at that stage presented as the ID document applicable to her. I don't know whether or not you can find it. You will see on your right hand top corner, the student number was allocated 658212-5. Now, you will also see the letters N stroke S right at the top. It stands for new student. And the rest of the page is simple information of personal nature. But what is important is that she also applied at that stage for a senior certificate. Or as we say, the exemption certificate. The reason is that the certificate that she presented at that stage was not sufficient for purposes of studying at UNISA or to be allowed to study at university. You will see at the left bottom corner where it stands matriculation, the Old Afrikaans ONBK or unbekend or not known, and then also NVT, not van toepassing of not applicable. That indicates that the student had to apply for conditional matriculation exemption on the grounds of being 23 years or older. The application was received by the Matriculation Board, which is a government department, and they stamp indicating the bottom of that particular post that they received the application and the exemption was given to her.
Okay, just stop there then, Mr. Faik. When did this all happen? Which year?
This happened in 1988. That was her first year of registration at UNISA.
The month?
I do not see the date now on the face of it, but what I can tell you is that if you page further down to A4, that from A1 to A4 is the complete set of registration documentation at that stage, and on page 4 you will find at the right and bottom signed off by Ms. Chabalala as Ima Rubani, and it was done on the 8th of January 1988.
Now, for which degree, of course, did she register?
If you page over to Annexure A2, I note in the narrative that I refer to Red Star, but at the moment, obviously, when we made the photocopies of Red Star, everything became Red Stars. But you will note then from Annexure A2, that the student registered for the Bachelor of Commerce degree registration code 02011. The student registered for 3 courses of the 12 required for the relevant degree, which was a BEC 100-N, which is Business Economic 1, APS 100-8, which is Industrial Psychology 1, and ECN 100-F, which is Economic 1, or Economics 1.
Okay, sorry, okay, can I just ask you to speak to the mic?
Yeah. Do you want me to repeat the sentence now, or everybody heard?
You can repeat it.
The three courses that she registered for was BEC 100-N, Business Economics 1, IPS 100-B, Industrial Psychology 1, and ECN 100-F, Economics 1. You will also notice that the student indicated on a heading B that she had not been registered at JESA before. That is what you will get to the red stars at the bottom of the page. You will see on the column B, there is a zero. That is what it stands for.
Just to tidy up the process of registration, you indicated that in her matric certificate at the time, Ms. Chabalala did not have a university endorsement in her matric certificate. Is that correct?
That is correct, and that is why specific exemption was requested. The old language referred to OPA matric, which means that if you are half a certain age and you go through a certain process, then you may get exemption and be allowed to study. That is why the 23 years of age was relevant. Now, for purposes of this registration, she was then allowed. However, you will notice that we at one stage also, and now I refer you to Annexure A4, you will notice there at the bottom at the code 012, which was voorwaardelijk, vrijgesteld or conditionally exempted, as well as the fact that the 102 that on the flag 111 indicating that we UNISA require her marriage certificate. The reason was that a senior school leaving certificate was in her maiden name Chabalala, but she applied as Magubani. However, later in the documentation you will notice that the exemption certificate which was then issued was in the name of Magubani, and we then no longer require that confirmation from her.
Just to recap the registration process, Ms. Magubane Bon Chabalala applies for registration for a BCom degree since January 1988. She's got a matric certificate without the university endorsement. She is required to apply to the matriculation board for the conditional examination, is that correct?
That is correct.
And it's a B, which is a letter dated the 8th of January, 1988. Can you get that? Just for the record, read that letter.
Which of you was addressed to Mrs. Magubane, and this is actually a letter of confirmation by a visa to her that she has, or that she was not at that stage registered for a bachelor's and commerce degree, the relevant code 02011, and that it was done on the 8th of January 1988. The two warning flags which was set on registration on NHRA 4.
Sorry, Mr. Fleur. Can you just read the letter without flagging any sentences?
Dear student, I hereby confirm that you have been registered for the current academic year as follows. The post-qualification BCom, and then the code that I already referred to, the code of the subjects I have read out earlier on, which is Business Economics, Industrial Psychology 1, and the Economics subjects. It then reads further to avoid cancellation of your registration and forfeiting your minimum initial payment, you must submit the following to the registrar academic before the 15th of April. The code 102, which you will find in NHR 4, A4, a certificate or a certified copy of a certificate of conditional exemption from the matriculation examination. If you have not applied yet for such a certificate, you must do so immediately. Further details, including the address of the Joint Matriculation Board, will be found under matriculation-admission-to-studies on page 21 to 23 in part 1 of the calendar. And we also require a certified copy of your marriage certificate or divorce order where applicable. Your attention is drawn to the requirements for admission to studies in 1988 and later is set out on pages 13 to 15 in part 10 of the calendar, and it was signed off by Stokov on behalf of the registrar.
In response to this letter, did she apply for this conditional examination? And if so, what was the outcome?
She application was made, and the Joint Matriculation Board submitted an Exhibit C, in which it indicates that it is a certificate of conditional exemption from matriculation examination issued to candidate of 23 years of age and older, and it was issued to Alan Zandile Magobani, and date of birth is indicated there. And I think what is important, if you look at the middle section of the certificate on the NB, the second part, it says the certificate shall be considered to have lapsed if the applicant does not satisfy the requirements set forth above on or before the 31st of March 1993. But a fresh certificate of conditional exemption may be issued on application and on payment of normal exemption fee. The reason why it is important to take note of this, you will see later on when the second registration was discussed or are going to be discussed, that this plays a role why the registration was later on cancelled.
The investigators must then have received this certificate. What was the process thereafter?
It was received, and it was, as you will see, at the bottom of Annexure A1 already. A stamp was brought onto registration document saying that it was received and that she was admitted and registered. So what happened then is that she became an official registered student for a BCom at UNISA first year.
Was her registration formal confirmed?
I do not have an official confirmation letter except the one already referred to in Annexure B, which is the first confirmation that she was officially registered, and by submitting the Joint Matriculation Board exemption documentation and the stamp brought onto Annexure A1, according to our records, she was fully admitted as a registered student at UNISA.
The Annexure E, a letter dated 11 March 1988. Can you read that for the record?
Annexure E is a document, 11 March. In March, it was then written to her that since the names of your certificate, this document is not so much to confirm that she was registered, but you will recall that initially there was uncertainty whether or not she was to be registered as Magubane and or Chabalala, and for that matter had an ID document or a marriage certificate and or a divorce order was it for. Now, since the issuing of the joint the exemption certificate by the Matriculation Board confirms that it was done in the surname Magubane, the university then wrote to her on the 11th of March and said, listen, since the names of your certificate of conditional exemption from matriculation exemption are Alan Zandile Magubane, You are registered as such, and you must use only these names and initials in all future correspondence with the university. See on the surname and first names on page 30 in part 1 of the calendar for further details. So HLE is to confirm the fact that even though you are registered for purposes of the university, you are going to be Bagbani as long as you study here.
The student, Ms. Mukuba is now your student. She is enrolled for 3 courses. What then happens to the 3 courses she had registered?
Sorry, I don't follow the question. Speaking.
You say that Ms. Mukuba enrolled for a BCom degree.
Yes.
And she enrolled for 3 courses out of the 12.
Yes.
I'm asking you, in 1988, what happened to the 3 courses?
I'll be with you now. I need to refer you now to Annika F. She obviously, through the normal course of events, received study material and indication of the books and or other materials that she may need, and she started the studies. Nita F. confirms then that she wrote to us, UNISA, and say that she wished to cancel Business Economics 1 for 1988, and that she then be left with only Industrial Psychology 1 and Economics 1. That is what Enneka F says. Now, if you go to Enneka G, you will notice that the internal process, the student advisor then did the necessary recording, she gave instructions that the business economic course for the student must be cancelled as requested. And this is then followed up by a letter at your age that UNISA then wrote to Mrs. Magubai at that stage and say to, which says, as requested, I've cancelled your registration for the following study unit for the current academic year if applicable, and that your account has been credited in accordance with the information. And then the subject underneath that, business economics, which was the one that she cancelled.
The letter dated 20th of May, 1988.
That is the case.
And what happens to the 2 remaining courses that she had registered?
She proceeded in with her studies, but it appears from the records that we have that she only wrote one of the 2 remaining subjects. Because the record, we've got a letter on the record that confirms to her, that is now amateur I, that her industrial psychology course was transferred from October-November 1988 to the examination in January 1989. The transfer of this examination can be seen on NHL in later on, but in order to explain to the committee is something, this only happens when you did not, when you receive a year mark allowing you to write the examination, and then you either don't write it, then it's automatically transferred. The only other way that it's done is when you do not pass your examination and there's then extra examination opportunity arises for you, allowing you to write the second paper on the same opportunity in January. The fact that this was simply transferred indicates to us that she did not write industrial psychology at the end of 88, and therefore it was automatically transferred to January 1989.
I'd like to take you to Ms. Chabalala's academic record, your answer.
this stage, I'd like you to only speak to the outcome of these three courses in respect of the 1998 registration year.
Teacher in says to the committee that in 1988 she was registered for the three courses already mentioned. That Business Economics 1, as we already know now, she cancelled. That in Economics 1 she did not obtain the relevant year mark to be allowed or to be admitted to write examination in Economics. And that the one that she did wrote, namely Industrial Psychology, which is at the beginning of 1989, she unfortunately failed.
To then move to, was there other years that subsequent to 1988 that she registered?
According to the visa records, Mrs. Magubane at that stage disappeared from the radar. She did not come back, she did not register again, she did not study with us again. The first time that we picked up the proverbial patch was in 1996, when she for a second time registered at UNISA again for a BCom degree. That you will find in NHSJ and further.
I just would like you to take the committee through the registration form in 1996.
According to the record that we have today in 1996, she registered in this case as Chabalala, not as Magubane, and she submitted then a new South African pass ID document. So that is why you will see that the ID number appearing on this registration form differs from the one that was submitted way back in 88. Because she has had at that stage now a valid ID document with an ID number under the name Chabalala, we registered her as Ellen Chabalala under ID number 580802-0896081. You will also notice, if you look at an address J, that under question 10, she then indicated at the bottom under paragraph 19. The question was the particulars of all previous registrations at UNISA and or other universities or technicals and nursing colleges and so on and so forth. And then gives you the institute, example, UNISA, UCT, JCE and so on and so forth. And then you will see there that she said that she in 1995 completed a diploma, without telling us what diploma, but at the SBL. Now, because she did not specifically say UNISA or UCT or WITS or any other one, we did not take really notice of it. The fact of the matter is she indicated in paragraph 19 that she registered at another institution for a diploma in 1995.
The details of the proposed registration, questions 22-28, I think indicators J1. See, can you read what is in question 22?
22 indicates once again that she registered for a BCom. You will see that the very same, what happened here is that the system then picked up that she previously studied with us. So the system then in itself allocated the very same student number again. It will see on your right top. She registered for the courses, as you will see in the middle there. In this case, it was IPS 100-8, Industrial Psychology 1, that is now the one filed in 89, IEM 100-5, Reduction to Economics and Management Environment, and BEC 100, which is Business Management 1. All these courses were first-year courses.
Now, which year does this happen?
This happened in 1996. You will see at the bottom of Integer J1, she signed off as Ellen Jabalala, or E. Jabalala, and the left-hand corner you will see it happened on the 7th of February 1996.
So the impression one gathers from this registration form is that on the 7th of February 1996, Ms. Jabalala is applying for enrollment for a BCom degree. Is this correct?
That is correct. Yeah, obviously, I mean, what one says is that in 88 she registered for a BCom with the results as already indicated. She then disappeared from the scene, and in 1996 she was repeating the process now with same qualification, first year courses, except that apparently she now only took industrial psychology to view other first-year subjects.
In numerically, 1993 since 1996, correct?
I don't think I follow the question, but yes, if you want to say that 1996 follows after 1993, that is correct.
Would, assuming that in 1993, the university had awarded a certificate or a BCom degree to the same student, what would have happened to this form?
I honestly, sorry, will you please repeat the question? I don't follow exactly what you're asking me.
We are in 1996, your Integer J1. And Ms. Jabalala is registering for a BCom degree. Now the question that I'm asking is, if in 1983, that's just for argument's sake, I'm not saying that is what happened, if in 1993, the university had awarded her a BCom degree, would that be appearing on this form? Would those courses that she would have passed be appearing on this form?
The system will immediately pick up whether or not the student previously studied at the university and what courses she studied for and what courses she passed and or what qualifications was awarded and or conferred upon. So yes, it will immediately indicate so much. But then again, I suppose you technically it is possible to study as many BCom degrees if you want to. If you want to do the same BCom over and over again, you can do so. I suppose with recognition of certain qualifications already passed and then getting credit for it and then add new subjects, but that would be an exercise of fertility as far as I'm concerned.
But the question is, the university, if she was in possession of a BCom degree, it would have appeared on this first year course.
Yes, yes.
She registered in 1996. What happened to the registration?
Well, if you look at Integer J1, in the middle, that is now on the right hand side of that graph, you will see that there is a kind of a endorsement which says 4 plus 23, 199303. So what this actually says is she remember now that the matriculation exemption was only valid until March 1993, which I already wrote into the record. I just take you back for the time being to NHSC again. If you look at NHSC, the middle section, the second paragraph, where it reads as follows, it says, the certificate shall be considered to have lapsed if the applicant does not satisfy the requirements set forth above on or before 31st March 1993. But a fresh certificate conditional exemption may be issued on application. Now, what this document actually says is that it requires you to pass certain courses which make the requirement of having exemption no longer relevant. If you pass certain courses, then automatically you now qualify. If you do not pass those subjects, then you do not qualify, and then the exemption in this case will come to an end in March 1993. So what the 1996 registration tells us is that she did not pass any subjects required for exemption. Therefore, following 1993, the previous exemption lapsed. You need now to apply again for exemption. And this is what this endorsement actually says in J1, is that, yes, you're registered, but you need now to apply for exemption again.
Alex, okay, there is a letter from the university addressed to Ms. Chabalala E.L., dated the 29th of March, 1996. Can you read that for the record?
Yeah, this one are now the registration of 1996, and it says, dear student, I refer to previous correspondence regarding the application for exemption from circulation endorsement, to which I have not yet received a reply. To avoid cancellation of your application, you are again urgently requested to submit the item, in brackets, items listed below, on or before the 11th of May 1996. Now, what was required was an amount of 60 rand to enable me to renew your certificate of conditional exemption. And the second one under code 379, a copy of this letter must accompany all future correspondence or payments with regard to your application. What the university actually says to us, listen, you've applied now again. You did not pass any of the required subjects that would have otherwise given you automatic matric exemption. Therefore, you need now to reapply. So for that matter, if I can go back into to the matriculation document, if I can read further the very same paragraph. But a fresh certificate of conditional exemption may be issued on application and on payment of the normalization fee. So there was a certain fee applicable, which in this case was 60 rand. So what the university said was, listen, give me the 60 rand and I'll apply for you to get your exemption extended.
The Sanexa L, a letter dated 6 May, 1996, from the university to Ms. Chabalala. Can you just read that letter for the record again?
Yeah, it's dated 6th of May. It's once again directed at Chabalala. It says, my letter dated the 10th of April, which was the previous one. You were reminded to submit certain outstanding documents before the 30th of April. According to the university's request, the outstanding documents have now been received. I sincerely do regret to inform you that your registration for all the study units for which you were registered this year, that is now 1996, was therefore cancelled. Please see Rule D3, Part 1 or 8 of the calendar. If you have already submitted the outstanding document, please contact the university at the above mentioned telephone number immediately. Any future application for registration will be considered only if they are accompanied by the prescribed document. In terms of paragraph D1, brackets K, in part 1 or 8 of the calendar, you'll forfeit the minimum amount that was payable on registration. If your account has a credit balance as a result of the cancellation, it will be refunded in October of this year. credit balances esteemed in countries with a different monetary system than South Africa will however be refunded only on written request. So this document actually says to the listener, you've registered with us, there was an outstanding requirement, namely the extension of your matriculation exemption. We've reminded you now more than once, you have submitted the same, therefore we cancel unilaterally now. We cancel your registration with us. You're no longer studying with us.
And Sir M, there's a letter dated 2nd August 1996 from the university to Ms. Shabalala. Can you, for the record, read that letter?
2nd August 1996, you assume I refer to previous correspondence in connection with your application for exemption from the matriculation endorsement for admission to studies at this university. Your application has now been cancelled, and where applicable, my check being a fund of your exemption fees paid is enclosed herewith. Should you wish to reapply for a certificate of exemption from the matriculation endorsement, outstanding document and or prescribed fee must be submitted. Please note that the minimum requirement for the issuing of a certificate of exemption change from time to time any future application for exemption will be subject to requirements applicable at the time of application. A copy of this letter must accompany all future correspondence or payment in connection with the application.
This letter signals the end of the relationship that would have existed between the university and Ms. Shabalala in 1996, is that correct?
As far as the BCom studies are concerned, indeed, and you will, if you now go back to NHRA, the second part, the first part you will see deals with the 88 exercise, the second part with the 1996, and what it actually says in May 1996, UNISA cancelled the three courses that she registered for, and at the bottom there you will see no into if credits have been accumulated, if credit, and so forth. So what she says actually is the second part. She thought 1996 it was cancelled in the further studies.
Let's just in the part of the BCom. Because she did not possess a university endorsement, for her to be registered at the university, she had to obtain a conditional examination from the matriculation course, correct?
That is correct.
That she obtained this conditional examination from the matriculation board in respect of her initial registration back in 1988, correct?
That was a requirement, and she applied for it, and she received it, and she was allowed to study.
Is correct that that constitutional exemption was valid until the end of the academic year 1993?
It was valid, if required. Again, I think it is very important to realize that what it says is that maybe if the committee would just allow me to go back to it. If you read it, you will see what it says here is that the Joint Matriculation Board resolved to grant conditional exemption from matriculation examination to Ellen Zandile Mkabane under the special conditions applicable to the candidate of 23 years of age or over, or the purpose of proceeding to a bachelor's degree or a recognized diploma of at least 3 years duration, for which matriculation certificate or certificate of exemption is a prerequisite. The condition upon which such conditional exemption is granted is that the candidate pass in all the courses prescribed in the degree or diploma. A certificate of full exemption will be issued on receipt of a statement from you to the effect that he or she has satisfied the condition. Under the first paragraph, if the candidate changes his or her curriculum in such a manner that one or more of the above-mentioned courses where applicable are excluded, a full amended curriculum must be submitted to the Joint Matriculation Board and a minor certificate of conditional exemption will then be issued. Why this is important? If Mrs. Chabalala was awarded or passed all the courses for a BCom degree since 1988, her first registration, then the certificate would not have been required in 1996. The fact is she did not pass a BCom degree or the courses, and therefore it lapsed in 1993 and it was a requirement again in 1996. And because she did not apply for an extension of the exemption in 1996, UNISA in May, if I recall correctly, unilaterally cancelled the registration. So, in that effect, no studies whatsoever took place by Makubani or Shabalala in 1996 at UNISA.
That position, as you alluded earlier on, is cabinet in Annex M, which is the academic record of Ms. Shabalala at UNISA.
That is correct.
In respect of BCom studies, you subsequent to this ever receive in a registration form for the registration for BCom degree?
Sorry, repeat please.
The registration in 1988, there was a second registration in 1996 for a BCom degree for the same university. Now we know what happened in 1988. With that registration. We know what happened with the 1996 registration.
Yes.
For BCom. Okay. Did the university receive other registrations from her to study toward a BCom degree?
Not as far as the records show.
The diploma, can you enlighten the committee what the university records reflect in respect of the diploma in labor relations?
The records are as per NHR SBL 1, April I think it is SBL 8. What it says here is that Mrs. Chabalala applied to study in just, I think it's 1995. She applied to study at the SBL. At that stage there was a development program in labor relations, and she specifically applied to do that diploma course. From the records, it appears that she was at that stage employed by, if I recall correctly, Sportnet. And one of the requirements to do the study was that you must be operating in the relevant field of the study. And Sportnet then wrote to UNISA on our request on the 25th of November 1994, saying that we would hereby like to inform you that Ellen Chabalala is employed by Portnet as a human resources officer and as industrial relations is part of a portfolio. We would like to enroll her for development program in labor relations offered by. So, from this, it appears to be an initiative from Portnet to have student Chabalala studying for this diploma.
She did register for this diploma, correct?
She registered for the diploma, as would be clear from NHR SBL 1 and 2. It also indicated the relevant subjects that she enrolled for. And that is SBL, yeah, SBL 2.
How many courses did she have to pass to be awarded this diploma?
The diploma requires 6 courses or 6 modules. The diploma was structured in such a manner that it was a year course, and within that year you are required to pass all the relevant modules in order to be awarded the relevant program. So student number 1443 at 44 was allocated to her. She was registered for the 6 modules required, and the student signed the registration form and declared that his intention to comply with all the rules and conditions for the registration. You were then at this from MHO SBL3 that the letter of confirmation that the student's application was successful was dispatched to her, and that the study material will follow.
What happened to these? Did she register for the 6 courses?
Yes, she registered. It was SBL 5 and 6 respectively, lists of materials required as prescribed books, and in the case of SBL 5, you will see a signature there. That was the 1st of December 1994. But yes, she was then given the relevant information and list of what was required to be studied, and as far as the record shows, that she did do all the required, I suppose, assignments, work. But the end of the story is that if you look at SBR 7, that reflects the results after the student wrote 4 of the 6 required courses.
So the SBR 7,
yes.
Is that the letter dated 22nd November 1995 from the University School of Business Leadership?
You see, it was in the end of the year, and she wrote the relevant courses. Now, it appears from the record at that stage that she wrote 4, starting from DPLRCC, or the left-hand column, and the last one was DPLROB. Now,
can this for the record read the courses that were registered and the outcome thereof as reflected in that letter of 22nd November 1995.
In this case, you will notice that the DPLR stands for Diploma in Labor Relations, and then there's indication of what the course is all about. Unfortunately, I don't have it now with me, so I will just refer to it right as it stands. The first one, all of them started in the DPLR's first one, CC. She wrote the examination. She received a mark of 52%, and she passed it. The second one, dealing with HR, which I suppose is human resources, she did not write at all. The next one, ending with IM, she received the final mark of 36, and that's failed. The next one, which looks to me like labor relations, she did not write. Next one, ending with RMA, she received 42 and was failed. And the last one, ending with OB, she received 51, which she passed, which tells us that from the 6 subjects, 2 was not, she did not write 2. She passed to and she failed to.
Can you continue reading?
At the bottom then of that particular document, it says you may write special examinations in the 2 courses which you did not write. Both special examinations are written in Pretoria, and it gives the address. A copy of the supplementary special examination timetable is attached, as well as a roadmap. Then he says, you unfortunately do not qualify for supplementary examinations in the two courses which you failed, but you may repeat those courses. The rules for repetition of courses are attached. Should you wish to repeat the courses which you failed, the test registration form must reach the SBL as soon as possible, but not later than 15th of January 1996. The discharge study fees must please accompany your application. Please do not hesitate to contact us if you require further information. Now, according to the records, if you go to SBL 8, she then did write the two subjects that she did not write the previous year. But unfortunately, as you could see, they failed all of them.
Now, she registered 6, and we know she passed 2, failed 4.
Yes.
How many modules did she have to successfully complete or have to be awarded this diploma?
According to my understanding, she, in order to receive this diploma as qualification, you need to pass all of it. That is why you will see in the previous letter, SBL 7, it says, you will be allowed to write the two that you did not write, but you will be allowed to repeat those that you failed. So, what it actually says in SBL 7 is even if you do pass the two subjects that you did not write, you will have to repeat the two that you failed.
You already referred to answer SBL 8. It is a university, U.S. Graduate School of Business Leadership letter to Ms. Habalala, dated the 6th of February, 1986. There are results that are given there, and this is where you say she failed 4 courses and passed 2.
Yeah, if you go back to SBL 7, you will see that she passed first one, EPLRCC, with 52%, and she passed the last one, EPLROB, 51%. She, at that stage, already failed DPLRIM, and she already failed DPLRMA. So the two that she did not write, namely DPLRHR and DPLRLA, that was the two that was then written in the supplementary examination, or let's rather say she was given a second opportunity to write. But the one DPLRHR she received 13%, 1.3, and the one DPLRLA 35%. That is why the university then wrote to her and says, because you have not cumulatively, because you have been cumulatively unsuccessful in 4 or more courses, you may not be readmitted to the DPLR. We do have a hope and then it goes on. So what it says is, listen, when this came out, you did so poorly that you will not be allowed to be readmitted. What I'm saying is that the previous one, it was saying, listen, you can write those that you did not write, and you can repeat the other two that you failed. This one says, you may not be readmitted.
Now, having looked at answer SBL 8, and the paragraph you just read out now for the record, will it be correct to submit that Ms. Habalala was not awarded this particular certificate by the university?
No, she was not awarded this qualification for the diploma, nor by UNISA.
It would also be correct that her claims that UNISA would have awarded her this qualification in 1996 would be in court.
Mr. Vadara, I can only repeat what I've said in the past. According to your visa records, no qualification whatsoever was awarded to Mrs. Chabalala or Makubani. Not by your visa, not by the SBR.
The understanding is that there was an inquiry made by Mercedes-Benz regarding qualifications. That is in Annex V1 of their documents. Can you speak to that?
The only reason why I decided to bring this to the fore is that MIE, as indicated, is a data bank that are well known in South Africa and even used by institutions abroad to verify qualifications, because they've got access to most of the data banks available in South Africa. And it appears from this document that in 2011, Ms. Chabalala or Bobani applied for a position at the Mercedes Benz, so it appears. And that one way or the other, MIE was requested to verify qualifications, and that they wrote to us with a request to confirm the following, and that is a diploma in labor relations and a bachelor in commerce degree. You will also see on the document, apparently there was a claim that there is an international license, cannot make out this, not regional, but another kind of diploma in banking, but not apparently involving UNISA. And UNISA didn't simply confirm that the diploma in labor law as well as the bachelor in commerce was not awarded to her by UNISA. That was in 2011.
So if you were just to draw the committee's attention to the years claimed in this document as years on which the qualifications were obtained, okay, can you just read that for the record in respect of the diploma in labor relations as well as the bachelor of commerce?
The diploma, according to MIE, was awarded in 1996, and the bachelor's of commerce, unfortunately, I cannot really make out. It is either 83 or 93. I try to be assuming. So this is good as mine.
But your testimony this morning is that in 1996 there's already a letter, and it's a SBL-8 from the university to her, telling her that because you have been cumulatively unsuccessful in four or more courses, you may not be readmitted to the DELR. Close quote. How do you reconcile that statement in view of what is appearing on Annex V1, the date on which this diploma in labor relations was obtained?
I cannot reconcile it. I've got no answer for it. I don't know why it is claimed. But you will notice from, I just saw a document here, the 9th of October, 9th of May 2011, we wrote to MIE in which we say, this is confirmed that Ms. Chabalala Izzet was previously registered for a B.Com degree at UNISA in 88 and then in 1996, and that the degree was not completed. With regard to the labor relations diploma, we did not even respond to IC.
sorry, Chair, but the date appearing on Annex V1 in the sector of the Bachelor of Commerce, the year there appears to be 1993. Can you just look at the document? Annex V1.
Of the no, I see that 1993, but it's not. Well, it could be even 88 or something else. But on the first, you know, it looks like a 93 or 83.
That's slightly different. That's not. Cattle skulls around that. And let us, for argument's sake, say if it was claimed that that qualification was obtained, the BCOM was obtained in 1993 from UNISA, would that statement be accurate?
No, it will not be correct. Remember, you will see that when this document was submitted, it was submitted with an ID number. And it was what we then normally do is we use information available to us to put into the system, and according to the response that we sent back to them, we were apparently able to confirm to them the student number now, which means that our system can pick up from the ID number, the student number, and we confirmed that she was registered for a BCom degree at UNISA in 88, and then again in February 96, and that no degree was completed. So, according to UNISA's records, and I think it's very important to understand that I'm not here to testify or making a case against anybody, whether it's Chabalal or anybody else. I'm just looking here to really confirm the records of UNISA. And UNISA's record says that this is when she started with us, that nothing was awarded to her, and any other claim, as far as we are concerned, is non-existent. It's simply not there.
I'm almost done, Mr. Van Dyk, but there's just one correspondence that I would like you to speak to. And it is the letter, the response letter to Media 24's inquiry regarding the qualifications of Ms. Chabalal. Okay, can you indicate to the committee what was the response from the university?
Mr. Van Dyk, I don't have the letter in front of me. I do recall that I compiled the letter and I even signed it off. But my recollection is very clear. I simply say in the first paragraph that I refer to your request or application for information dated a certain date in the past, and confirm that no qualification was awarded to the said individual by this university. I think that's more or less that. I did not go into detail. Today is actually the only day since we became involved that we do this thing to bring out and disclose all the relevant information and detail about Chabalal.
There is an electronic letter in the PC. Can you just have a look at it and confirm whether or not there's a document you're referring to?
That was indeed the document that I was referring to, dated 4th July, and directed at the relevant journalist, which is from Amara, it appears, Media 24. It reads, Madam, as is the information of personal information, Ms. Chabalal, paragraph 1, the email dated 8th March 2014 has reference. Second paragraph, according to our records, no qualification was awarded to the mentioned individual. And that was that.
Now, reference to that statement would it be reference to both the BCom degree as well as the diploma level?
What we try to convey is that with the relevant information made available to us, we access our systems and see, irrespective of what the qualification courses or was awarded or obtained, what we actually say is nothing whatsoever, whether BCom or a diploma level, as far as the research records are concerned, no qualification, irrespective, was ever conferred or awarded to this person.
I don't have any further questions for Mr. Van Beek.
Thank you, Mr. Van Beek. That was the first witness, and we don't have many, and it's only two. Do you remember? Allow me to proceed to the next witness. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Van Beek. I will take the second witness, who is Ngoma, Mr. Ngoma. Were you requiring a bit of a break?
Sir, I see it's almost 10 to 1, and I was going to propose that now is the time for lunch, and then when we come back, we file it. If not, if we take a 5-minute break.
Okay, we would like to just finalize the issue of witness so that when we come back, we deliberate. We can give you a 5-minute break just to sort yourself out, but let's proceed with the next witness and then break for lunch and then do deliberation after lunch, if you do not mind, Mr. Vanas. 5-minute break, members. That's the lecture. Let's finish today. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, they do, yeah.
For everyone to sit down. Okay. Can you then proceed? We are now talking to the next witness, the second witness and the very last witness, so that we can definitely move on from there. The next witness is the Portfolio Committee Secretary, the Secretary to the Portfolio Committee. That is Mr. Thembi Nkosi Kenneth Ngoma. Mr. Thembi Nkosi Kenneth Ngoma, do you swear that the content of your submission or what you are about to testify on this matter is correct? If so, please raise your hand and say, so help me God.
So help me God.
Thank you. Proceed, Mr. Vanas.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Ngoma, can you confirm that during the fourth parliament, that is the parliament before the current one, what was your position?
I was a committee secretary to the Portfolio Committee on Communications.
Around about July 2003, on or about there, the committee had advertised for nominations for the member of the SABC board, is that right?
Yes, that is correct. It was around, it was towards the end of 2013.
Can you share with the committee what happened after the closing date when you started receiving the nomination forms, and in the process zoom specifically to one candidate, Ms. Ellen Zandile Shabalala?
The closing date for the nominations for persons to serve on the SABC board was Friday, 19th of July, 2013-1600. And tradition is that after the closing date, then you look at the nominations if they are complete. And in an event where they are not complete, then you contact the relevant nominated person and request for additional documents, which was the case in Ms. Shabalala's nomination when the qualifications were not attached.
Well, what happened when you realized that she did not attach the qualifications? And perhaps you can just enlighten the committee, how did you become aware that she had qualifications, that these qualifications were not, according thereof, were not attached to the CV?
After receiving the CV together with the nomination letter and nomination acceptance, I looked through the CV to see if there were any other qualifications listed, if there were no qualifications attached. And having realized that there were a number of qualifications listed on the CV, I then called Ms. Shabalala and requested that she send me the copies of the certified copies of her qualifications as listed on her CV. And about a day or two later, I then received an email from her which contained an affidavit and our certificate.
Before we get to the details, I have in my possession what appears to be a curriculum vitae of one Ellen Zandile Shabalala. I want to show it to you and to please confirm if this is the document that you received. It is in the document pack. It is the first document under divulger number 1. Do you have that?
Yes, I have it.
Okay, can you just go through the document to confirm if this is the CV that you received together with the nomination form?
Yes, I can confirm that this is the CV that I have received.
You indicated that you then noticed there were academic qualifications and that there were no certified copies of the claimed academic qualifications. Can you tell the committee which of those qualifications were claimed and which of those qualifications there was no certified copy or copies of?
When I received the application, there was no certified copies of all the qualifications that are claimed on receiving.
Page 3 of the CV of Ms. Alexandre Chavanana lists the qualifications you're referring to. On page 3, there's a list of educational experience. Can you read that for the record on page 3 under the heading educational experience?
Another educational experience is corporate governance and risk management certificate from Mill Park Business School, a master's degree, engineering business management, Warwick University, degree not completed, diploma in labor relations, DPLR, postgraduate, UNISA, bachelor of commerce degree, UNISA, international licentiate diploma of banking, Institute of Bankers, South Africa.
You know, in possession of this nomination form with this curriculum vitae, and there are no certified copies, what then do you do?
I then phoned Ms. Chabalala and requested that she send the copies of the certified copies of the qualifications.
What was her response?
The response was that I would get the qualifications and a day or two later I then received the curriculum. My religious I then received the affidavit together with one certificate.
You take the committee through this document, you say it's an affidavit you received from her. Can you read it for the record?
South African Police Service and Team Phone slash affirmed affidavit, full names Ellen Zandile Chabalala, identity slash passport number 580802-0896-081, country South Africa, residential address 19 Alu Street, Brainstone 2145, telephone number 083-758-1682, this address is P.O. Box 69081, Princeton 2021, same telephone number that appeared on another residential address. I declare under oath, solemnly swear that I, Ms. Ellen Zandile Chabalala, 580802-0896-081, ID, wish to declare that around 2001 to 2002, my house was broken into and boots were stolen. Meth was reported to the police in Randburg. Amongst other items which were stolen was my bag, which contained all my academic records, certificates, and all my private documents. As a result, I could not submit the required credentials except for one copy of my certificate I acquired in 2012.
Who signed this document? Can you tell the committee?
The document signature is E, and I can make up the signature, but I see that's written E, and then there's a surname there. Sorry, a surname there, which is not really clear. But underneath it states that it's the deponent's signature. And right below that, and it's signed by the Commissioner of Oaths.
There's something attached to this affidavit. What was it?
attached to the affidavit was a certificate from Middle Park Junior School.
Issued in whose name?
The certificate is issued in Ms. Ellen Chalala's name.
Well, what was the cause that the certificate was issued in this paper?
Certificate, this is to certify that Ellen Chabalala has been awarded the short course certificate in corporate governance and risk management, and the date of issue is 11 April 2013.
And would it correct that this certificate is the one that Ms. Chabalala claimed in her C? As a certificate in corporate governance and risk management from Middle Park Business School.
That is correct, yes, sir.
Now, how did you receive this? Well, was it faxed? Was it sent by mail? How did it get to you?
The document, I can't hear it, but it was either email or fax, but it came from my email, because even if it was fax, I use a fax email.
Now, in possession of this affidavit and the certificate, what then happened?
Then took the document, affidavit, and the certificate, attached it to Ms. Chabalala's application, and submitted all the documents to the committee.
Is it correct then that the receiving the nomination, the affidavit, as well as the certified copy of the Milk Park certificate, all of these formed part of Ms. Chabalala's documents that were considered by the committee?
It is correct. That is together with the nomination letter and the nomination acceptance letter.
These documents, Ms. Chabalala, understanding, was recommended for appointment to serve the post, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
The report will then have been prepared for the assembly in respect of the recommended candidates, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And the documents in respect of each recommended candidate will then have served before the National Assembly, correct?
That is correct.
No further questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ngoha. Thank you, Mr. Vanara. Is there anything that you need to find out, members? Any questions? Yeah. When we come back. Okay. Okay, can you then take a lunch break and get back for home? Thank you.
Okay.